I go through most of my shows without it ever getting requested, and then every 5 or 10 shows, somebody go, can you do the lip curl? Do the lip curl. You know, I say, well, all right, thank you very much. Yeah. But I find it's hard to stay in character, because I'm kind of not in character right now.
Yeah.
I'm kind of more my DJ thing.
Right.
But when I get up and start singing, then I try to do the Elvis thing more. But,
Yeah, I mean, one thing I noticed is these all look to be older Elvis costumes as opposed
older
to...
Older jumpsuit.
Yeah.
He started his jumpsuit career in 1970
right.
at the International Hotel in Las Vegas. And what it did, it gave, well, unbeknownst to him at the time, that was his basically his third phase of his career.
Mm-hmm.
His first phase was the young Elvis, when he was, you know, wearing the gold lamé jacket, and then, of course, even lesser than that, at the Louisiana Hayride shows, where he was, like, up on his ankles, you know,
sure.
and doing crazy things that a 20-year-old can do. And then in the 60s, of course, was mostly movies.
Right.
And then, just as it looked like his career was basically DOA, he reinvented himself and started doing concerts and jumpsuit shows in the 70s. And what that does for guys like me, impersonators or tribute artists, you know, the official word is tribute artist.
Right.
Or the politically correct term is tribute artist. But what it gave guys like me the opportunity was the younger guys can do the young Elvis where they've got loads of energy, and I'm 65 years old. So we kind of do the jumpsuit shows where he wasn't doing as many moves. He did a few of the signature, you know, and stuff like that, but it allowed us to get up there and actually emulate Elvis, and it's probably his most popular phase, mostly. And every once in a while I'll get a gig where they'll say, we want the young Elvis. So I'll politely decline and say, well, I only do 68 comeback special and later. I have the leather suit too, the 68 comeback right. leather. It's upstairs. I didn't bring that down.
Right. So, do you have people who you recommend in a situation like that?
I just usually say, no, I don't do that. What they've done, these services, these online services, I'm on GigMaster. I used to be on Gig Salad, but I quit them because I didn't like something they implemented. So I'm on GigMasters now exclusively, and I've been with them ever since the beginning, 2004 when I started. What happens? They do not a bait and switch kind of thing, but their whole business is hooking up entertainers with clients who are having a party, wedding reception, wedding even. So what they'll do, what you'll do is you go on there and you'll search Elvis, Potomac, Maryland, for example. I come up and, he looks great. Watch the video. So they go to book me, but then there's that little fine print down at the bottom, auto add, and it's checked. And it adds up to, I've seen 10, 15 other tribute artists are added to the query. So I get it. I get it in my email, and I can tell when I look at it. Up at the top, there's a yellow bar, and it says, you've been auto-added to this. That means I was not the primary guy. So when I see that there's no yellow bar up there, I know I was the guy that they really want.
Right.
So it's always bad if I've already got a commitment or it's too far to travel. Every once in a while, I'll get one 200 miles away where I'm the primary guy, and if I'm free, and it's, you know, 1 hour, 2 hours, I'll bid on it, and sometimes I'll get that gig.
Yeah.
But basically, what they do is they give these tribute artists an opportunity to outbid each other. It's a whole bidding thing.
I see.
And where I've done well is I'm the affordable Elvis. I'm not going to say I underbid everybody, but my rates are very good, very good.
Sorry, are you ready?
Yeah. Yep. May I?
Yeah, so I had a feeling.
Is that all
go ahead,
right?
Pick it up.
Okay. Let's see, where's the best place in the
belt? Well, you can put it right on the belt.
Okay, I don't want to get anything here.
Just don't scrape anything off the belt.
Exactly. So it's not...
Any nail heads or something.
It's not pushed in super hard, so it's
okay.
Just resting nicely up there.
And so what do we have to do here?
Let's see. Please turn just a little more, because we can't really string it up through anything.
Yeah, that's true.
So maybe we'll just clip it here, if that's okay.
Sure.
Okay. Sorry. And
actually, there's a stain there that I haven't been able to get out. It'll cover it.
So perfect.
That's the trouble with the white suits. Stains.
Oh. Yes.
So, yeah, let me just try to tuck this a little bit more in the back so it's a little less distracting. And then you have ample room anyway, so.
Are you, like, recording this as we speak?
I'm recording the audio, yeah.
Okay. And Rick,
you're supposed to say that. I'm recording this. I kind of figured.
Yeah.
I was afraid I'd done half the interview and you didn't get any of it.
Well, no, I don't think that's the case.
All right. So if you don't mind taking just a small step back
and
I'll resituate. And then you can just, you know, look at Rick. And try to keep your feet in one place, if you don't mind. And that's it for me.
Okay. So, first of all, what is your full name?
Well, I'll just give my first name.
Okay.
It's gotten onto the internet, but I prefer just to be known as Richard.
Okay.
It's my real. In fact, I do Neil Diamond also. I don't know if you knew that. I'm known as Richard as Neil. So.
Well, partially I noticed because of the car.
Yeah.
I was hoping we could take a picture of that. On
sure. Okay, great.
So, I guess for starters, you know, when did you start paying tribute to Elvis?
Channeling my inner Ted Baxter, it all started at a karaoke club in New Orleans in 1995. I was an IT guy at a trade association in Alexandria, and we went down to New Orleans for one of our conventions. And one night we were eating dinner on Bourbon Street, and we walked down French Quarter, Bourbon Street, and there was this little karaoke bar called the Cat's Meow. And I walked in there in street clothes and a bowling jacket, and I got up and butchered Pretty Woman by Roy Orbison. Well, it turned out we were going back there the next year, and I had a whole year to think about it. And I thought, I'll do Elvis next time. Get out of there. Nobody does that. So next year I rented a costume at Jean's Costumes in beautiful downtown Wheaton, which I'm not even sure they still exist, a cheap wig, and walked into that restaurant to eat dinner in the jumpsuit, and then we walked down Bourbon Street to the Cat's Meow after dinner, and I was in full Elvis jumpsuit, and women are coming up to me and running their fingers through my hair on my chest, and it's like, wow, this is what it felt like to be Elvis. And I hadn't even gotten into the club yet. So we get into the club, and the DJ says, Elvis has entered the building. So I sign up, and I do Suspicious Minds and butcher that. But I did have the foresight to tape it. Paid the $5, whatever, got the videotape. And so I had the entire song, and there were a couple of snippets in there that were half decent. So a few years later, in our office, our new CEO, he was a very touchy-feely kind of guy, and he wanted everybody at every meeting every week, somebody would get up and talk about themselves, their life and their business career, etc. And being an IT guy, I thought I'd be a smart ass and get up there and do a PowerPoint presentation. So I had the slides of me as a child and, you know, high school and graduation. And then I put in a little 30 or 40 second clip of Suspicious Minds at the karaoke club. And the guy comes up to me afterwards and puts his arm around me and says, Richard, I want you to do something for me. I want you to be the entertainment at our Christmas party. So I was like, okay, now I've arrived. We've arrived. So I start doing some research, and I think I rented another costume or jumpsuit. They're known as jumpsuits, by the way. Sorry. And then I found out somewhere along the way that Elvis gave out or received scarves during his show. So I did a little online internet search and found a woman who made scarves out in Springfield, Missouri. And she goes, well, you know, I run a contest in Branson. You ought to join. Ah, I'm no good. I'm just doing this for fun. Well, next thing I know, I'm thinking about it, and just like that, I'm buying a jumpsuit, the Aloha. This one.
Oh, right.
Yeah. This is my second Aloha suit, by the way. First one I wore out. Next thing I know, I'm buying the jumpsuit, and it's Memorial Weekend 2004, and I make my debut in Branson, Missouri at an Elvis contest. And I came in 38th out of 39. Because I had studied all his moves at the Aloha concert, and I tried to do them, but I was still too, I didn't have them down, you know, second nature, and I was very herky-jerky, you know. You know, and it was very too planned and deliberate. So, and that, and my voice wasn't quite there, probably, and various other things. So I've had another 13 years to work on it, and at that show, I met a guy who actually came in behind me, but he gave me the several good pieces of advice. He gave me the name of a web host that I could use, and I used them for the first about 4 or 5 years. And he also told me about Gigmasters. And when I got home, I went right online and signed up. It's not expensive. It pays for itself in one gig, one one-hour show, and the membership for a year is paid for. So, first thing I do is I sign up, and the first gig query I get is from the Today Show in New York. Matt Lauer, they're going to do a birthday party for Matt Lauer. And they needed an Elvis for a scene, a Vegas scene. He was going to be walking down some yellow brick road type thing, and there was going to be an Elvis there, and they were looking for an Elvis. I didn't get the gig, but it gave me an idea of how powerful that booking site was. In fact, the gig got canceled because Katrina happened right after that. And
I imagine it was also an indicator of how high the demand still is.
Oh yeah, 13 years later, I've done 1,400 shows of varying. I do anything from a 10-15 minute telegram to I've done 3 hour shows. The longest shows I've ever done were for a thing called Metro Performs. Remember they had a program a few years ago?
Yeah.
I don't think they still have it. But it was very little money for long hours outside, and they wouldn't give you a power outlet, so I had to use a battery-powered, it's in the other room, battery-powered amp. Like you see that they use at Potbelly and places like that.
Yeah.
I'm giving too many brand names, aren't I?
It's okay. You were, I mean, surely you had sung before, in front of people before deciding to meet.
I was in the boys' chorus in high school, and that's the last time I had sung.
Really?
What happened, though, I was into music and radio ever since I can remember. I grew up in McLean Falls Church. I listened to Ween as a kid, and my dream was to one day be a disc jockey there. I don't know if you go back that far, but... and then, of course, WPGC came along, and that was another dream to work there. I later found out it was kind of a zoo there. That was when it was top 40. But I wound up getting into radio, and I had a 30-year career as a disc jockey at various stations, including Wash FM, Extra 104 when they were doing oldies, W Light, which became the Arrow Classic Rock, which is now, I guess, I don't even know what it is now, the Globe?
I don't remember.
So what happened is I learned how to be in front of an audience doing record hops, DJ appearances, you know, on air. And I had developed a lower authoritative DJ type voice. I was just a normal time and temperature kind of guy. But what I'd done is I had forced my voice into this lower pitch, and it made it very difficult when I finally started doing the Elvis to hit high notes. So I wound up having to take a few voice lessons and just work on some of these songs so I could get to a point where I could, instead of, instead of, oh, see, she's a rider. Instead of doing that, what Elvis really did, oh, see, she's a rider. Oh, see, you know, that kind of thing. So. And eventually the power songs, there's about a handful of power songs. Some of them I can do, especially if I've got one in the right key. I've got one that is that I was thinking of doing for you if you want to hear something. You might have to move the camera for that. But, well, actually, you don't have to. Anyway, there's some power songs where there are karaoke, good karaoke versions that are in the correct key that I can reach, where I can reach the high notes. And then others, not so much, like Unchained Melody. I can't even touch that one, because there's no version of that in a key where I can hit the high note comfortably and sound good doing it. But I got to a point where I can actually do many of the power songs, like How Great Thou Art, American Trilogy, My Way, Hurt, which is the one I was going to do for you, and then some others.
Yeah, Hurt's a powerhouse. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, that was Elvis's opera moment.
Sure.
I always say when I'm doing my gigs.
He had a few opera moments, yeah. Actually. I always thought he sounded a bit like Caruso. Basically.
Yeah.
So what is it about Elvis? I mean, you know,
he's just got a draw. Before I got into radio, I was working in a record store at Old Seven Corners, which is still there, I guess. It was one of those outside buildings called Music Time. And I saw how popular he was by the people coming in buying Elvis albums there. Back in, this was even in the early 70s. And they wanted the old stuff, and he was just getting into his jumpsuit era at that point. But yeah, I saw the draw that he was, and obviously he was already a legend, and I think it was made even bigger with his early demise, obviously. I think he sealed his legend with that. But what was the question?
Well, just what is it about Elvis and you know, sort of the
well,
second...
he was a great entertainer, and I liken him, I've heard this said before, and I agree, he's probably one of the two greatest entertainers of the 20th century, the other one being Frank Sinatra. And, of course, Elvis borrowed one of Frank's songs, and I do that one for birthdays, actually, all the time.
I was just saying on the way over here, and I talked to somebody at Graceland as well a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, have you been to Graceland?
Yes, the first year. My son was college age, and we were dropping him off at Clemson University. He was getting ready to attend there. And it was it was about a week later, because next week is Elvis week,
right.
As you know.
And it's the 40th.
Today's the 9th, by the way. Yeah, it's a big one. So we had two choices. Hey, you want to go to Myrtle Beach? Never been there. Do a little bit. Hey, let's go west. Let's go Memphis. Let's go to Memphis. Because I just started getting into doing this. In fact, I had just done the Branson thing that May. So we drove first to Tupelo, and we saw the old White House they grew up in. And then we drove up to Memphis and spent a couple days there. And it was just the beginning of the Candlelight Vigil the evening we got there. And we actually got in line for the Candlelight Vigil. But we had somehow set up a tour for the next day. I don't know how we were able to get tickets, but we did. So we were in the Candlelight Vigil for a couple hours just to get a feel of that. And then the next day we got to see everything everybody had left at the gravesite after taking a tour of the house. And it's awesome. It was pretty awesome. It was a just crazy, ethereal thing. The draw.
Yeah. You know, there are a lot of artists, and you know, the woman from Graceland said this too. There are a lot of artists who died, you know, great artists who died like 40 plus years ago, and they do not have this kind of sustained fandom or this level
true.
Of emotion.
That's
what
true.
What is it?
And, I'm thinking Jim Croce comes to my mind.
Yeah.
He very quiet, you know.
Yeah.
He died young. I believe it was a plane crash, I think, for him.
Yeah.
And it was almost at the height of his popularity. But he was a fringe hit artist.
Okay, but...
And Elvis was the guy who started rock and roll, basically.
Yeah.
Arguably.
But that was a... But that was that was a long time ago. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm thinking like Jimi Hendrix or Otis Redding. It's not the same kind of thing.
Yeah, it's hard to put a finger on. I think the three phases of his career really helped, how he kept reinventing himself, and how he somehow survived Tom Parker's tutelage and the movies. But I think the jumpsuit thing, it kind of became a Liberace moment for him, and he just became a figure larger than life when he started doing the jumpsuit shows. And
it's a funny story. I was just reading that allegedly some people in London wanted to bring Elvis in for a week of shows, and they called Tom Parker and they offered him $28,000 for the week, and he said, "Well, that's okay for me. Now, what are you going to pay Elvis?"
Which sounds about right.
Now, what year would that have been?
I think that was early 70s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I think he was a bigger draw than that, even at that time. So,
well, it's,
you know, it's, you want me to take these off, by the way? I normally don't wear these during the shows.
Yeah. What, however you want.
I look more Elvis-like with them on.
Well, I was going to say,
Elvis, I had a woman just a couple weeks ago.
Way across town.
Yeah. I had a woman who wanted to book me, and she says, "Now wear the glasses the whole show." She was a talent agent up in Connecticut. And I said, "Well, normally I wear them for the first song, and then I take them off, because if you know, Elvis never wore he never wore these during shows. This is another one of those curled lip stereotypes. His glasses were off during his show, during his concerts." So I put them on at the Can't Help Falling in Love, the last song. Boy, it's bright. So I don't know, leave them off, put them on.
However you're comfortable.
Yeah, whatever you'd like to do.
I'll leave them on for now. So it's like, well, you know, I understand she didn't know this. And she said, "Well, that's interesting. I wasn't aware of that." But and she was under that stereotype that Elvis always wore these glasses. And I'm sure some of the, I mean, I consider myself a tribute artist in the sense that I have studied enough of him and I've gone to enough contests where nobody wears glasses. But if you get some rookie in there who's doing his first show, he'll keep him on the whole thing. And you know what the key is? You're supposed to make eye contact with your audience. And you can't see the eyes through these shades for the most part, so.
Right. I mean, that's one of, you know, there's this, I mean, Elvis is kind of this icon, you know, in the sense that if you put on the wig and the jumpsuit, you're kind of in Elvis mode. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
You don't look that much like Elvis. And, you know, and the woman from Graceland said, "Yeah, you know, my favorite Elvis tribute artists are not the ones who look and act and sound the most
there
like
Elvis." There are some that have gone to great pains. They're younger than I am. I mean, I started this when I'm figuring it out this morning. I was 52 when I really started doing this for money. Way late to the game. I mean, this is just a retirement thing right now. I mean, I'm retired from my real job, and I just go out and make some, you know, mad money, pay the bills, pay the, you know, utilities and nest egg and that kind of thing. But what was my point?
I was talking about how much you actually have to look like Elvis to be...
There are some guys that actually get the plastic surgery done. One guy down in Stafford, who I believe has had plastic surgery done to make himself look, and now he's getting older and it's starting to not look so good, but at an early age, he was one of the very early Elvis impersonators too. Mm-hmm. In fact, when I was at WXTR, I actually did radio commercials for him in 1982 for doing Elvis. So my hat's off to him. He got in the business very quick. And he runs one of the ultimate tribute contests down in Memphis during Elvis Week. So he's done really well for himself in his career. Okay. So
how much does one of these suits cost, and about how much have you spent on the on the regalia and such?
Gosh, let me think here. Sorry, I hit the mic. I got to think about this. If you go to a company called B&K in Indiana, they make the official Elvis jumpsuits. However, you pay dearly for them. This suit from them would be like $4,500, $5,000. I got this one for $1,500, new. The previous one I got, the first one, was $1,200. I can't remember how much this one was, but I think it was maybe $1,000 at the most. This is one of the easiest suits to make.
It's the tassel one, right?
Yeah, it's basically macrame. Macrame with beads sewn onto the strands. This one I can go to a gig in the car without putting towels down because these won't come off. And the suit won't tear up the seat, and the seat won't tear up the suit. But some of these others, some of these others are very intricate. These are all called nail heads. This suit was actually very inexpensive. I was very happy with the price, but it took a woman 8 months to make it. This was $800. This one was probably not even, might have been $750 or $800. And whoops, this guy I bought used, $300. And the belt, the red belt for it, is actually not a matching belt. This is the wrong belt. It's basically an Aloha belt in red. This belt really goes with this suit because I've got the exact same belt in white, and that's the one that I use with this suit. But this one looks good with it.
Right, so there's a whole thing. You look at the photographs and say, "This is the belt that went with this particular."
Yeah, I mean, I bought this thing as a set, and I can live with that. So obviously, the blue belt goes with the blue suit. The black belt goes with the black suit, and I can't say for sure, but I believe this red suit and the black suit. And the fringe. These two came from the same woman in Bristol, Tennessee. This one, I believe, also was made by her. This one was made by a woman who it took her so long to make the suit, she said she'd make me another one for free, but I haven't talked to her in like 10 years. So I think that offer's probably gone by the wayside. This one was made by a woman who's now in Illinois, Southern Illinois, I think Mount Vernon. It's called the Right Stitch. And she made this suit and this suit, and this is my best suit, my newest and best. It's called the Dragon. Elvis wore this in 1974. And right about the time Olivia Newton-John was having hits like Let Me Be There, If You Love Me, Let Me Know, Elvis did those too.
Right.
He borrowed them.
Sure. He borrowed a lot of things.
He
was happy.
He did.
He would do hits.
He did Never Been to Spain, mm-hmm. for Long Night. He did... The Last Farewell of all things.
Wow.
Roger Whittaker.
Yeah.
Righteous, you did Unchained Melody, You've Lost That Love and Feeling, Proud Mary. He borrowed a lot of hits while he was holed up in Graceland listening to the AM radio, I think. I could do that one.
All right, there's a song, whatever you
want. Yeah, whatever you're this might blow you out of the room.
We can move wherever.
I figured you guys would be back here. I forgot about the camera.
Just one moment, I'll be looking.
Now, I have not warmed up on this one, but I think I can go right into it pretty good. It's very easy to just get rolling on this song. I do have to turn this on. I hope it doesn't blow your mic. Could be a little loud. I've backed it down. Some. this thing works. It's the first time I've tried the Cyclops since it got repaired. Test. Oops. We not on? Oh. It helps to plug in the amp.
Ah.
I unplugged it because the wireless mic stayed on. Whoops. Test 1, 2. Okay, I apologize. Oops, apologize, this is too loud. Testing 1, 2. Test.
An unusual request that you would get, an unusual song request.
I've gotten some funny ones from songs I don't think Elvis even ever did. I can't give you any names right now, but I can't pull up any names. But some people are just completely off the wall with songs they want to hear. It's like, I don't think Elvis did that one, you know?
Right.
But most of the time they want songs that...
the stuff everybody knows.
Yeah. And I don't do every one. I've got about 128 of them listed on my website. Most of them I don't sing that often. And, if somebody wants one, an obscure one, fairly obscure, like Just Pretend is a good one. That's another power song. If I've got enough lead time, I'll bone up on it, practice it a few times. I've had to learn songs like... Rockahula Baby, which is one from one of his movies, which was not a jumpsuit song at all. He never sang that at his concerts, but sometimes people request stuff like that, and I do my best to try to accommodate them if it's beforehand, but if it's at the show, they're probably out of luck for the most part.
Yeah, there's only so much you can do.
What's she looking at?
Now? I'm just getting a couple cutaways, please don't mind me.
Here, the rings. The finest in cubic zirconia.
There you go.
This one
is the Aloha ring,
right.
Horseshoe. There you go. This one's his taking care of business in a flash. Actually, it goes like that. As is this.
Yeah, you want to get that.
That was his motto in the 70s.
Sure.
And the rest of them, Costco majority.
Yeah. Now, you know, I guess the way I would say it is, if you, I mean, your first Elvis impersonation concert, contest, you finished.
I was a deer in the headlights.
You finished 38th out of 39. That would indicate to most people, I probably should not be doing this.
Well, no, that was my very first try at it. I did not do well in contests. I will not deny that. I've done about, I'm going to say 10 of them over the years. It was mostly earlier. I've stopped doing them. I cashed in a couple of them, but what's happened, I've come to realize my brand of Elvis is usually not what plays with judges. I do a very lighthearted, humorous show that is not really as conducive to stiff contests, scenarios, as it is for just private parties. And I mean, I've done, I was at the 9:30 Club. That was the biggest name venue I've ever done. I opened for a band there about 5 years ago, 6 years ago. That was a lot of fun. But I mostly do private parties. I do some lodges. I do lots of assisted livings because that's prime Elvis territory right there. I mean, prime Elvis age, most of the folks there. And I've gotten very comfortable doing that. In fact, I'm doing one tomorrow in Alexandria. Saturday, I drive out to Delaware. A guy's having a horseshoe tournament, and he's having me open the proceedings at 11 in the morning, all the way up in Newcastle, Delaware.
Open up? What, are you going to sing the national anthem?
I am.
Wow.
I actually am at the end of the set. Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, I've done that for another guy as Neil Diamond in Leesburg the last few years. He has this 5K run at a golf course in southwest Leesburg, Virginia. And he has me come out, and he loves Neil Diamond, so I do my Neil Diamond and I sing the national anthem. I'm in my blue sequin shirt. So it's crazy, crazy stuff.
What is the mindset? I mean, do you have to get into different mindsets to do Elvis and to do Neil?
Yeah, I prefer to do Neil first. Some people book me to do both. And I do a little short costume change, 15 minutes to get into the, kind of like it was taken while you guys were waiting down here. It takes me about 15 minutes to get into the jumpsuit and get, you know, the hairpiece right, get the rings on and the boots, and sometimes the belt's a pain in the butt to put on. But yeah, there it is. Neil's a different voice. I do a little fourth thing. It's very easy to do. I find it comes really natural for me. My wife says I look more like him than I do Elvis. So I prefer to usually recommend to the client, let's do the Neil first as the opening act, and then I'll come out and make the big entrance in the jumpsuit for the second part of the show, and we'll do the Elvis to close. And it's a lot easier to, I don't know, it seems a lot easier to go Neil to Elvis than the other way around, since I'm hitting a lot of high notes with Elvis and not with Neil.
So you'd say it takes about 10-15 minutes to get to become Elvis.
I've got it pretty much down to a sign. I mean, when I go to a gig and I'll get there and I have to change there, I'll allow, if it starts at 8 p.m., I got to be in the bathroom at 7:45 to start the transformation. So you got to, you know, brush your teeth, wash your mouth out, put the deodorant on, then get out of your clothes, get into the... And some of the places I have to change, some have been unbelievable. I've had to change in restaurant kitchens before. Greasy floor. You don't know if you're going to slip and fall and have a nice big grease stain on your butt. Tiny areas with sawdust on the floor. And then I've had gorgeous, big, spread-out bathrooms with an attached bedroom where I can sit on the bed to put the boots on. It's the whole gamut. It's amazing. It's really amazing.
So is there a mindset? Is there a psyching up adjustment you got to go into?
No, I don't have to psych up. I do try to sing when I'm on the way to a gig, especially if it's an hour away or a half hour. I'll put on a few of the tracks in the car, especially if there's one I'm having trouble with. or if there's one with a high note, like my way, if I'm doing my way, I gotta be able to hit that last note. Or else it's not gonna sound real good. And if I'm, sometimes in the winter or fall or whatever, and I've got a cold, it's always dicey whether I'm gonna be able to pull that off. And sometimes I do and sometimes I can't. I've had a couple of shows where I've been just a wreck, stopped up, and it's just tough to get through.
Yeah. Do you want to do another song?
It's up to you.
I would love it.
Sure.
You want something more traditional or requests?
something faster?
That's what I was thinking.
That would be great.
I can do the concert version of Blue Suede if you want, maybe.
Sure.
Let's see. I guess this thing works.
Yeah.
This is a concert version where he... he does a little improvisation toward the end of the song.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, you said one of the problems you have with concerts is that you're loose and humorous, and I think Elvis was very loose and humorous in concerts.
Sometimes I get almost too much. I've got these 20-second gaps between the songs,
right.
And so I'm free to say stuff, and sometimes I make little private jokes. And let me stress, by the way, I'm not making, when I say loose and humorous, I'm not making fun of Elvis per se.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just trying to be lighthearted, and I'm like a comedian in a jumpsuit, basically.
No, I get it. No, Elvis made fun of himself as much.
Yeah. That's what it turns out anyway. Yeah. All right, testing 1, 2. Test, test, test. Well, it's a 1 for the money, 2 for the show. 3 to get ready now, go, get go, and don't you step on my white suede shoes. You can know anything to lay off of my blue suede shoes. You can knock me down, slam on the face, banner my name all over the place. Do anything that you want to do, but honey, lay off of my cheese and don't you step on my blue suede shoes. You can know anything but lay off of my blue suede shoes. Well, it's a blue, blue, blue suede shoes. 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 You can know anything but lay off of my blue suede. Play it again, get it again, do it again, yeah. Blue, blue, blue suede shoes. 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 You can know anything but lay off. My blue suede shoes. Okay.
Thank you.
Great, thanks.
All right. So, like there's the joke with Elvis ripping his suit. This one is a definite candidate for that. It was very tightly made. That's one of the things I like about it. But if I go down and do the splits, rip, it could rip. I've had the black suit rip. The seat in the black suit has been strongly reinforced. Because one time, fortunately I was wearing black underwear. So you couldn't really, I don't think you could really notice it, but it ripped during one of my shows. And I've had the leather pants that I wear for the 68 comeback, they've also ripped. So I had to get those totally reinforced.
It did not occur to me, but yeah, I imagine a color match between your underwear and the suit is probably really
critical.
Yeah.
So, right. Yeah, fun stuff.
There you go.
What else?
I don't know. I think I'm good. I will email you. I'll email you if there's something else. But I think that's good. Unless there's something you'd like to add.
Well, I told you I'm 65. I'm not sure how much longer I'm going to be doing this. In fact, I'm amazed I've been doing it this long, but. I'm starting to get the turkey neck and the, and I don't plan to do any plastic surgery, by the way. As long as I semi-resemble him and can sing half decently, I'll keep going, but I can't see probably doing it past 70, most likely. So I'm probably good for another 5 years.
Well, yeah, and it occurred to me,
Elvis is in his 80s right now, so.
Well, but I was going to say, he was 42 when he died, so there's a limit to how much anybody who's older than that is going to look like him.
Yeah. So
there you go.
So it's an occupational hazard, so to speak.
Okay, well, thanks very much.
Yeah, it was nice meeting you. Yeah, and thanks for coming out.
Absolutely.